This podcast is a member of the Voices of Wrestling Podcasting Network. Visit voicesofwrestling.com to hear the rest of our great podcasts, as well as show reviews, columns, opinions, and updates across the world of wrestling.
Welcome back to another episode of The Good, The Bad, and The Hungy on the Voices of Wrestling Podcasting Network. I am your host, Tyler Fornes, and with me today is Fred Moreland, who did not just try to steal my bank information. How are you, sir?
I'm doing well. I have a long track record of not stealing bank info, and I'm just proud to say that I kept that up so far this week.
Yeah, you've done a very good job, and not the person in Houston, Texas, trying to use my money at Walmart. Well, unfortunately, CM Punk may have to be using Walmart here soon because I'm getting the increasing feeling that he will no longer be with the company, Fred. And a lot of that is coming from speculation by Wade Keller on his last podcast. And there were some very interesting things that he ended up saying. And one interesting piece of speculation from Keller was that there was belief by people in AEW that thought Tony Khan was more excited about what he could do with Punk than what he could do with the Elite, being Kenny Omega and the Young Bucks. Now, there's a lot that's going to come out of this, and we're going to talk about it, but what did you think about that line right there, that he would be more excited about Punk than Omega and the Bucks?
Yeah, I assume at this point, since we're recording this on Monday, the 24th of October, that that everyone's heard that a buyout is likely. Meltzer reported on it. I think Keller has either reported or speculated on it before. We've got Fightful talking about it now, so it's making the rounds. And it seems like an inevitability at this point that CM Punk will be bought out from his contract with AEW. There will be no return. This is it for him. As far as the idea of Tony Khan being more interested in what he could do creatively with CM Punk as a character versus the Elite, I mean, it makes sense to me because CM Punk had been gone for so long, and even, you know, like his run in AEW was not even a year. I mean, he was under contract for a year plus to this point, obviously, but a solid chunk of that year he was out injured, so he wasn't able to use him. So let's just call it 6 months or so. Maybe seven, once you include the mini comeback before the second injury and all the other shenanigans of this year's All Out. But there's just a lot of meat left on that bone that we're not going to get to see play out in, you know, AEW television with who they have or what, you know, anyone they might have wanted to line up against him. You know, because just think about the roster. Like, it would have been great to have a Kenny Omega feud. It would have been great to have him do something with Bryan Danielson on such a high level. You know, you can just go right on down. The MJF, MJF was clearly being set up to feud with him in the near future, and that would probably be a big deal for MJF's career, and we've lost that. So I get it. I get why he would feel that way. I don't take that as like I'm stuck with these losers, as much as, you know, just between the two, there's a lot you can do, a lot more you can do with CM Punk because he presents a lot of new, fresh opportunities, even after a year under contract.
Yeah, he really does. And the fact that, you know, we kind of alluded to it, he was out for so long, kind of gives even more credence to the idea that, hey, there's a lot of meat on the bone with this guy. And unfortunately, he seems to have really sabotaged his own career by the events of Brawl Out. A couple things that were very interesting that Keller alluded to. Punk was at first seen as accessible and approachable, but not a locker room leader. There was some jealousy regarding Punk's salary, which may have been over $3 million a year. And I think what was really interesting that I think we should go deeper on because of this whole situation, three Keller sources in AEW speculate that if the AEW locker room voted on his return, it wouldn't go well, with two of those going as far as to speculate that he would not receive a single vote to come back. Wow. That is about as big of a burial without actually saying anything mean or disrespectful as you could possibly have.
Yeah, that's That's a hell of a statement right there. I listened to the podcast. I originally took these notes that we're going over by going over someone else's recap of Wake Keller than I actually had time to listen to Wake Keller this morning. And the interesting thing with it was that one person just outright was like, oh, he wouldn't get a vote, a single one. And then there was another guy that Keller said he was talking to, and he said these people are in AEW and like are respected people within AEW. And one of them, you know, he was talking with, and that person, the second person, said he wouldn't do well in a vote. And Wade then brought up, hey, I've heard from this some other person that he wouldn't get any votes. And the second person goes, well, yeah, they're probably right, or they could be right. Mm-hmm. I don't even think it's the fight, you know, like you know, there's a lot of interest over the fight because, I mean, it's a fight. Let's be real. And it got real public. But the real worst part of the whole situation was the press conference freak out of CM Punk. That really undercut the company, undercut Tony Khan, undercut a bunch of on-screen characters. You know, it's like the in-ring shoot back at Hangman Page for the comment that no one remembered. Where he emasculated a top babyface because he was mad, real mad. It's just CM Punk did no favors for AEW, and this went beyond just like settling a grudge into like just trying to burn the whole thing down because he was mad. Got up in his fifis.
Just a wild, wild situation here for both for AEW and Wade Keller. And
yes, yeah, CM Punk go to therapy 2022 challenge.
Well, at this point, I don't think therapy is necessarily going to help a 40 some year old Punk who's just a bitter, crotchety fellow.
Never too late to change. But yeah, I mean, he just was so mad. And, you know, there's all these other factors you could point out. Like, for example, at All Out, after he won the title, they were doing the in-ring celebration. The crowd started chanting for MJF in Chicago, Illinois, which up to that point had been like the hottest, you know, local crowd for any wrestler in decades. And CM Punk might have been put off by that or offended by that they were chanting for a younger heel over him. He might have just known that his arm injury was serious, that he wasn't going to go away for a while, and he may have just decided to really crank up the intensity of his post-show comments. Once that happened, but it definitely felt like it was something they had planned on doing as soon as he stepped into that press conference, probably planned on it God knows how many days before. And here we are, you know, just a wild, wild situation. You know, Wade Keller did intimate that that if what he's heard is correct, this, you know, it's not official or anything, but he's heard that Punk has a very high cost attorney, well respected attorney that he is using right now. And you know, I've talked about this a couple times now, but the thing with attorneys, with legal fights, is if you want to fight the fight, then it can really come down to who has more money.
Mm-hmm.
So if Tony Khan wants to waste that money just to win, that option is on the table for him. I don't know that he does. He might just want CM Punk to go away. Just, you know, kind of a we've had this issue and I just want it to end situation. It'll be interesting to follow that. And of course, there's the speculation of, you know, will he go to WWE CM Punk once his contract is up and any kind of non-compete clause is satisfied, which will be interesting. Because the thought is that Triple H, Paul Levesque, may be more willing to bring him in than Vince McMahon would have, because Vince very much took a tact towards his last few years of, we've already got all this money wrapped up, it's all guaranteed. I don't need people rocking the boat. I don't need to deal with this bullshit. I'm in my 70s. I just want to, you know, do questionable things sexually, allegedly. And yeah, so he was just like, okay, Braun Strowman annoys me, get him out of here. Bray Wyatt annoys me, get him out of here. Triple H is much more in a position where not only will he personally benefit if he brings in someone like CM Punk, because he'll be able to point at how he is a good leader for WWE because he got such a big name to come in that previously it was thought of as impossible, and the boost to business that might bring, likely would bring, with someone like CM Punk coming in. But also he's just more of a, you know, more willing to put up with possibly some bullshit right now. He might actually be better at handling it than old Vince. was between the two, you know. I can't imagine Vince McMahon in the 70s had much flexibility. That's kind of matches what all the stories about Vince McMahon over the past decades plus has been. And Paul may be more willing to work with people. Just speculation, but that's Wade covered a good bit of that too. Wade also said that he thought that the locker room is in general better than it is being portrayed. Of course, we have the drama of the CM Punk, Ace Steel, Elite fight. And on that note, I don't think we actually have said that Ace Steel was released last week officially.
I think we covered that on the last show.
Did we? I couldn't find it in my notes. Just in case, I thought it was in there. Did we cover that Ace Steel apparently on his secret private Instagram that has gone public, but only with a couple posts people captured, sent out the part of Blues Brothers where they're singing with Aretha Franklin, and in the middle of Respect, they start singing Freedom. And so Ace Steel clipped that and sent that out. And the reports were, you know, someone asked Dave Meltzer on his own message board, did Ace Steel do that because he thought he was going to, you know, get released? And Dave Meltzer said, no, actually, it was the opposite. He thought he was going to come back, which is kind of an amazing sentiment to have considering what all he did in that circumstance. That's kind of beside the point. But Wade Keller's big point was that backstage, it is actually good right now, and that there is good leadership there in spite of public drama like the Elite and Punk, and also Sammy Guevara and Andrade, and all the stuff with Thunder Rosa. Three people stepped up to fill the leadership gap backstage, and that's been Jericho, Jon Moxley, and Bryan Danielson, which has been talked about before in other reports, but that he thinks that none of them by themselves would be a perfect or a great, even necessarily, leader for the locker room. But the three of them together have kind of, they meld well together. You know, just somehow their personalities perfectly fit together to take care of this. And so things have been really good since that gap was filled by those three.
It's almost better to have multiple people in lockstep than it is to have one, especially because just like look at the people, the kind of personas that we know both Jericho, Moxley, and Danielson to be. All three strike me as very different individuals. Jericho is more of a flamboyant guy. Jon Moxley is, I want to sit at the bar and have a drink. Well, now it's an NA beer and just kind of leave me alone. And Danielson is just like, whoop-de-doo, I'm gonna go be vegan and hang out with my wife and kids. Like they all kind of give a different vibe and just live their lives and who they are just different. And when they all step up in leadership roles, you're going to fill different niches. And I think that has really done a good job and how they have been able to help this locker room over the course of this tumultuous last couple of months has been really, really nice.
Yeah. And, you know, I think that they all bring different things to the table, obviously. And that, you know, being able to, like you said, being able to have different people in charge of just, rather than just like one dominant figure, is going to be beneficial because different people react well to different kinds of coaching or different kinds of advice. And having three experienced veterans like that with these just completely different, you know, life experiences and professional experiences leading to this point in their careers would probably be beneficial as well. Also of note, I think, is that two of the people, Moxley and Jericho, have signed extensions recently that made a big deal in the press releases about how they're going to take more of a formal leadership role. And I just thought that was of interest. I don't know if we should expect anything with Bryan Danielson coming anytime soon since he came much sooner than the other two, but just something to keep in mind, I thought.
Yeah, it's a very, very interesting. And I'm really intrigued to see kind of how this all goes. Was there anything else worth mentioning from the Keller interview? I think we covered everything that we needed to.
I think we covered most of it. One thing is that one note that got me to laugh was that Keller noted that CM Punk is a big fan of unscripted promos, but being a, you know, involved in a company that does unscripted promos means you should probably have a thicker skin than otherwise. Mm-hmm. And that kind of initially led to some issues with the little shot from Hangman Page about workers' rights. that kind of helped precipitate all this. I'm not saying that's like the only or main cause, but it sure did help. But yeah, I think that's it, basically. Things in general, you know, that covers most of it, I think.
Yeah, I think so too. And we can kind of continue to move on. One of the big news stories from Tuesday night titles was the fact that Adam Page did suffer a concussion in the main event with Jon Moxley, which had to be stopped. He took a flimp up off a lariat, and it, I don't know if the concussion got happened because of the flip bump, but he landed a little awkwardly, and it felt like the first thing that ended up hitting the ground was his head. So not necessarily sure if that's what caused it, but he ended up not being able to finish the match. They loosened the bottom rope to take him off on a stretcher, and AEW was receiving praise in the mainstream media for how they handled Adam Page and his concussion, especially what has been happening with the Miami Dolphins and Tua Tagovailoa over the past few weeks. Deadspin even wrote an article directing the Dolphins to look at how AEW handled Page and his concussion as far as what they should be doing moving forward. Really disappointing end to what was a very fun and brutal match, but then the good part is Adam Page seems to be in good spirits. He seems to have a really clear projection as far as his health is concerned as of right now, and the result of the match was not changed due to injury. And I think, considering everything involved, I think this ended up being a pretty big win for AEW.
Yeah, you never want to say someone's lucky for getting a concussion, but in this circumstance, I think that's fair. Because the alternative, if he was going to have an injury, is that he was going to have some kind of neck damage, and that's not something you want to mess with. Yeah. You know, a broken neck could be calamitous to his career, and it's just his health. I mean, look at Big E. It's still not really clear if he's going to get back in the ring. He apparently wants to, and he's planning on it. We'll see, just because of the particular vertebra he broke. But also this year, Shinjiro Otani in a 0-1 match is still paralyzed from a broken neck that he suffered in that. So it was a very scary moment, of course. Fortunately, he was okay, again, relatively speaking. We don't know when he'll be back because he's in the concussion protocol, and concussions can be very funny in the sense that, you know, they could just resolve within a couple days. They can never resolve. Adam Cole has been out for the majority of the year with a concussion. There's no real word on him coming back anytime soon, which is, you know, frightening. But Hangman Page will hopefully not have such a long recovery. We'll be able to come back sooner rather than later.
Absolutely. And all the best to Hangman Page. And like you said, it is a little weird to call a concussion the best case scenario, but considering what it looked like, yeah. I'd say it's a pretty fair comparison. One thing you have written on the notes today, is something that you sent to me last night to watch. And I'm just going to read it verbatim. Athena committed murder. And what a interesting dark elevation match she had against Jody Threat. I believe that was taped in Toronto. Whoa.
Yeah, she's from Toronto. So, yeah.
That was good.
Yeah. But unfortunately, brought out a bunch of the worst bad faith people when it comes to not just pro wrestling discourse, but AEW discourse. And certainly no one would ever have any racist thoughts about a African-American performer whatsoever. Yeah, it was just a really dumb argument that people like really propagated on social media about there being some kind of, you know, like a shoot fight between Athena and Jody Threat. And, you know, if you watch it, they're snug. Athena always works pretty snug, I think. It just looked like a match, really. I mean, if I hadn't have heard about there being some kind of calamitous, I guess that's my word of the day, calamitous, some kind of terrible incident in this match or something, I wouldn't even watched it. But I put it on. It was like a 4-minute match. It was pretty entertaining for what it was. And it was just Athena hitting hard and Jody, you know, hitting hard back. And I mean, it's a whole bunch of nothing, but it made the rounds, got a lot of the safety police people very upset. And then it brought out the people who make money by going out of their way to talk bad about AEW and who are willing to trade their reputations for that to continue doing that. So just a tremendously stupid situation where absolutely nobody learned anything.
Yeah. those people need to learn what professional wrestling is, because they obviously don't. That is good, hard-hitting professional wrestling, and it felt like watching the match, because we've seen the Ivelisse matches where things take a turn in the ring and it becomes an actual shoot,
right?
Because of non-cooperation. Because at the end of the day, these wrestlers have each other's lives in their hands and they want to make sure that they keep each other safe. But the whole point is this illusion of complexity, where you want the illusion that it's absolutely brutal and it's painful and it's literally trying to kill the other person, but it's really not. And that's all this Athena stuff was. It was a well-constructed, hard-hitting match that looked brutal, but Jody Threat was really not in any actual danger.
No. Like, there was nothing in this match that made me think that Athena was taking liberties with her whatsoever. It was just very, I think maybe at one point they got off the same page with each other, but they got back together pretty quickly. Just filled it with some stiff forearms. Like, you know, I haven't actually watched it, but I've heard about that early 90s AJW training documentary about the Joshi training that was going on at that point in time in the All Japan Women company. And I'm sure that if these people that are genuinely shocked by how intense this match was watched that, they'd probably all just pass out in horror, assuming they're genuine, which I don't. It's just really dumb that this is even a thing that we have to talk about. But here we are covering all the stuff in the circle of AEW, and this is one of those things.
Exactly, and we're not going to spend any more time talking about the bad faith cheese board men and women of the world. We're going to move on to an interesting topic, which is you have titled Sean Dean versus Dave Meltzer.
Speaking of dumb things.
And it all started where Meltzer wrote in the Observer, "I'm not sure what the story is, but it was noted to me that a lot of the extras who were close to Thunder Rosa, like Kylan King, who seemed she was about to be elevated, Maddie Rankowski and Jasmine Allure haven't been booked as of late." And you noted, Fred, on our notes here, King's last match was August 24th. Rankowski's last match was March 23rd and Allure's July 14th. And this wasn't something that Dave was necessarily saying for sure, but it was something that it was noted to him and thought that it was interesting. Sean Dean's response tweet was, "It's the kind of careless reporting like this causing unnecessary issues and problems for no reason. You have no info, yet you still report this dumb BS. All those talented women are in good standing, so whoever brought that to your attention is a liar and a fraud." Well, that's dumb. Like, it's
Tyler, do you know what the Streisand effect is?
Is it Mecha Streisand? Because I like Mecha Streisand.
No, the Streisand effect is a so-called term for the internet when basically there's something that happens, and because you're offended by it, you bring attention to it. Because Barbara Streisand once sued a photographer for taking aerial photographs of her house, and that made everyone on the internet look at those pictures of her house. Because she didn't want people to be able to see her house. And as a result of her lawsuit, everyone in the world, or at least that was aware of the story, went and looked at her house. If Sean Dean didn't want anyone to, like, if he thought this was not worth even acknowledging, you know, that there wasn't anything to it, then what he should have done is just ignore it. And the quote you read from Meltzer is the entire paragraph regarding it. There's no other mention in it before or after the newsletter. It's just somebody pointed this out to me. It's weird. I don't know what it means, if it means anything, but I'm noting it in here. Next paragraph, let's talk about Paige VanZant. Like, that's literally how the Observer goes. By tweeting about it, Sean Dean brought a lot of attention to it. Now, I know that there are certain people in the wrestling business who think it's always a good idea to roast Dave Meltzer because it gets them brownie points with other certain segments of wrestling internet. But this is a case where it brought a lot more attention to an issue that really most likely is nothing. It's likely just they haven't been in Texas or near it, so for the most part, they haven't been bringing them in, like Dean implied or said. But because he made a big fuss about it, a lot more people are aware of this, not just that Meltzer wrote about it, but also the fact that these three women haven't been used. I do think it's kind of weird, personally. Like, the Rinkowski and Allure absences, that doesn't mean anything to me. They'd never really seem to be anything more than local talent. or uses mm-hmm. anything like that. It really did feel like that they were going to start pushing Kylan King back a couple months ago, and then they just stopped using her completely. I don't think there's anything in that that connects it to Thunder Rosa whatsoever. What I would imagine, if anything happened there, is that Kylan King just lost the advocate for her backstage with Thunder Rosa going away, and that may have impacted her getting booked. Is there a guarantee that impacted her getting booked? No, but it could have. And if so, that's not some kind of big conspiracy that an anti-Thunder Rosa force backstage is now taking out her friends too. It's just, well, there's a pattern here. Draw from it what you will. Kind of reporting from Meltzer.
Yeah, it's worth monitoring and being aware of, because it's easy to put A, B, and C together, especially when A, B, and C are already linked. Look, could it be a bunch of nothing? Could it just be something where AEW is just rotating people in and out? Absolutely.
I bet my money that it is just that.
Yeah, and especially with Kylan King, who seemed to be on an elevation pattern, but we remember her big singles match on Dynamite had almost no reaction from the crowd, which yeah. is partially because Kylan King is not over. And that's not her fault. She just has not been a pushed commodity. And it's hard for somebody who's never been pushed to be over on a level that you'd like to see for a match on Dynamite. And I'm just reading nothing into this. I think Sean Dean's response is just, you're just feeding into the Cornettes of the world. And
yeah, I don't know what he thought he was going to accomplish by tweeting about it at all, but he sure did.
Yes, he did. And something else that we're going to talk about here, AEW Dynamite's ratings from Tuesday Night Titles. 752,000 total viewers, a 0.26 in the 18 to 49, good for eighth on the night. Everything was behind, I believe, baseball and the debut of the NBA. So I'm not really concerned about that number. They had to move days. Losing about 25% of your audience feels about right.
Especially when you're going head-to-head with NXT on the same night. Mm-hmm. Who, by the way, they got 676,000 at a 0.18 in the 18 to 49, and they were 11th on the night.
And they loaded their show.
They did try to load their show. I mean, they didn't super load their show. They could have gone further. But they definitely did bring in a bunch of stars from the main roster to try to spice it up and make it more appealing. I think both companies should be happy with the numbers they got. I think they both did well. Considering all the competition they had, there was speculation that AEW could have been hurt or helped by the playoffs, and I really don't think either happened. The playoff game preceding it, where the Yankees, I think it was here, the Yankees eliminated the Guardians, rest in peace, 2022 Cleveland Guardians season.
It's okay, the Yankees season is done too, so you can feel
yeah. They had like 45 minutes between that game ending and the show and Dynamite starting. But also, Dynamite didn't have to get pushed back or anything or moved to like True TV. So, all in all, it didn't really have any effect on them, I think. So, all in all, I think AEW should be happy. I think WWE should be happy. I know that WWE was really hoping that they could, pull off a win here and beat AEW in the ratings. They didn't, but I think both numbers are very good with all that competition.
Yeah, I think it's good, and I'm not reading anything into it. When Thursday's ratings come out at 3 o'clock Central Time, I fully expect AEW to be right around a million, right around 0.34, like they've been living for the past month and a half. I don't really see that changing.
No, they've got a bump in their numbers recently, but nothing major from that. Like they hit their apex, and they have been hanging around there. I don't think there's any concern right now off the TV numbers.
Mm-hmm. Now, speaking of TV numbers, something that may do some business, Ultimo Dragon discussed wanting to wrestle Chris Jericho one more time and doing so in AEW. I don't think it's a matter of if at this point, because of everything that Tony Khan has done as far as the history of wrestling and bringing in the Great Muda and then letting Sting go wrestle in Japan. I think it's just a matter of time before we see Ultimo here wrestling Jericho. When do you think it'll happen?
I'd assume sometime soon, probably maybe after the pay-per-view, you know, I would guess. But I don't know. I haven't kept track of, like, if Ultimo Dragon's in the States right now, and if so, for how long. what I have heard makes me think that hopefully we'll see that be a tag match of some sort. I think Ultimo's best days are rather far behind him, unfortunately, in the ring. But it would be cool to see, just because that was a hell of a rivalry all over the world. And Dragon is an all-time legend in terms of his in-ring performances and his importance to the business. So I think Tony Khan would completely geek out and be happy to do this on the Dynamite.
Oh, it would be a lot of fun, and it would be something to continue to honor the history of wrestling, give fans a unique spectacle, which is exactly what this is. And I think it would be a lot of fun. Moving forward, Conan was starting his podcast, and he was talking about Santana and Ortiz, and he straight up said they do not get along, and that Santana wants more focus on them, and Ortiz is happy with where they are. And I think we kind of already knew this was a thing, especially when Santana was taking a lot of solo indie bookings before he ended up tearing his ACL at Blood and Guts. None of this should really be a surprise, but it is a little disappointing that we genuinely may not get Proud and Powerful back together.
Yeah, you've talked about this recently, about how the depth of the tag division is hurting in AEW and the loss of that team. You know, of course, it was already gone for the short term because of the ACL injury to Santana, but the loss of Proud and Powerful as a tag team does hurt that division further. They're currently having Ortiz team with Eddie Kingston. I don't know if that's just a short-term thing. Of course, they've been associated for quite a while on TV, and they kind of played into what they're doing there a little bit on Rampage this past Friday. But yeah, I mean, I'm not surprised. I think Santana definitely thinks he can be a main eventer somewhere. It'll be interesting to see what he does once he's healthy, if he's still under contract with AEW, or if he jumps somewhere else to try to accomplish that.
Yeah, that just a really disappointing end to a phenomenal tag team. Couple of financial notes here, Fred. Matt Hardy and Danhausen are in the top 10 of revenue earners off of Cameo per betting.com. That shouldn't really be too much of a surprise, especially considering Matt Hardy with the delete gimmick from the Broken Universe, and Danhausen being one of the funniest individuals I've ever seen. Good for them, making a few extra bucks, barely doing any work.
Yeah, this is this was a look they did at just the athletes on there. So there may be non-athlete people that are the bigger stars, but the top 10 was led by Mick Foley, who was pulling in about £440,000 per year. This is a British site, so you know. And then the top five or top 10 also contained at four Bret Hart, Matt Hardy at nine, and Danhausen at 10.
Interesting. Good for them. Sammy Guevara will be working the broadcast of the next Floyd Mayweather fight. Today I learned there's another Floyd Mayweather fight. And then Bobby Fish will also be making his boxing debut on the show. I'm intrigued to see why Guevara is working this fight. And I'm wondering if it has to do with the connection of Bobby Fish to try and bring in some more wrestling fans to the product, especially because boxing is... Look, as popular as boxing is, it is nowhere near what it was in its heyday. And I think you can trace a lot of the downfall back to the mid-80s with some of the BS with Sugar Shane and all those guys. Very interesting to see Guevara here.
Yeah, I kind of wouldn't be surprised if the people that are putting together these Mayweather exhibitions where he fights non-boxers would try to get Guevara in that spot at some point if they see him as someone that could generate interest, considering his position in AEW and everything else on social media with him. So,
absolutely. Jericho said on his podcast that he pushed TK to sign Saraya.
It's his fault. After the initial kind of really crappy promo segment that we already talked about, I haven't had a big issue with what she's been doing, which has just been pretty straightforward brawls, but yeah.
We'll see what it turns up to. Gangrel talking about another member of the women's division. He trained Paige VanZant, said that she has not appeared, and I'm very curious what that means, Fred.
Yeah, I did that. Was me like not completing a sentence. She has not appeared at her training sessions with him in quite a while. So it is implied basically that she's at least for now done with pro wrestling. which is a shame because it really felt like she could have been a star, like an immediate star in AEW if she came in with full interest and went all out, pardon the pun, to try to become a star there. Maybe she'll change her mind and come back more seriously in a year or two. But, you know, it's kind of a shame because she did feel like she had the potential of a breakout star, kind of like a Ronda Rousey, you know, coming into wrestling, you know, maybe not to the same level of fame, obviously, but something akin to that. And it just didn't lead to anything. They practically forgot to promote her for the pay-per-view, which I think may have had something to do with the training or lack thereof that she was doing. And, but that's where we are.
Yeah, and it's really unfortunate because when you take a look at Paige VanZant, one, she's a physical specimen. Two, she's very attractive. Three, she's an
In the hobby, it's not easy being a fan of ripping packs or repacks. We hype ourselves up thinking, maybe I can pull a Ken Griffey Jr. rookie card, but with zero transparency on available cards and hit rates, it's all just a shot in the dark. Until now. Introducing Slab Packs from ArenaClub.com, the only repack that provides real value, a complete view of all possible cards, and clear hit rates for each one. Now, when I buy Slab Packs at Arena Club, it finally feels like I know what I'm getting. I was able to open an Arena Club Slab Pack, and I'll be honest, it was a lot better than what you normally do. Say you go to a card show, and there's a random innocuous brown bag of cards, and yeah, you can open it and look, it's going to be junk. You know what I mean? Like, you know what you're probably going to get in those. Maybe you find that fun, and sometimes I do. Sometimes I like just opening up cards and saying, hey, look at some random cards or whatever. But if you're really in this game to find value and find particular cards, it sucks to have to buy these mystery packs, and it ends up being, you know, almost nothing, you know, nothing of value. Not with Arena Club. You get a display, again, of all available cards, hit rates, grading. So you know that when you're opening up the slab pack, you are going to get something valuable. You are getting something good. And Arena Club, in addition to having those great slab packs we just talked about, is also a marketplace for card collecting, buying, trading, selling, displaying, all that sort of stuff. But those Arena Club slab packs, man, they are revolutionizing the repack game with transparency. After your pulls are revealed, they'll immediately be placed in your vault for safekeeping or trading and selling, and you can have them officially graded by Arena Club as well. So again, setting these things off, it's going to be officially graded by Arena Club. And the Arena Club grading process is accurate, fast, and transparent, with full grade rationale provided and explanation of how your card was scored. So whether you're buying, selling, trading, or displaying, Arena Club is the card collecting platform that you have to check out. So right now, I've got a special offer here for Voices of Wrestling Network listeners. You can get 10% off of your first purchase by going to arenaclub.com/VOWnet. Again, that's arenaclub.com/VOWnet. Now, that's a crazy offer. That's 10% off a $400 slab pack. $40 off right there. 10% off your first purchase. No matter what that purchase is, 10% off. Again, that's arenaclub.com/VOWnet, arenaclub.com/VOWnet for 10% off your first purchase on Arena Club. And we thank them for sponsoring the Voices of Wrestling Podcast Network. What's going on, guys? This is Rich from the Flagship Podcast here on the Voices of Wrestling Podcast Network. If I could have a moment of your time, I'd like to tell you about one of our sponsors, Eufy Video Lock. Eufy Video Lock is a smart lock, a 2K camera, and a doorbell, all 3-in-1, offering you triple security. So you can have everything in one device rather than installing many pieces on your front door. But it's not just for security. The Eufy Video Lock is also for convenience. No more concerns about losing keys, and you can assign passwords to your family members and see them coming back home via the integrated cameras. Some other great features we love about the Eufy Video Lock is it is easy to install and set up with just a Phillips screwdriver, no drilling required. Keyless entry, no more fumbling for keys when your hands are full. You never have to worry about kids losing keys or passing among renters. You also have 0.3 second fingerprint recognition, and 1 second unlocking. Again, 0.3 seconds, it's going to recognize your fingerprints, and in 1 second, it's going to unlock. And with the AI self-learning chip embedded, the more you use it, the more accurate it will be. Also, no battery anxiety. You have a rechargeable battery in there that could last around 4 months, and you will get a low battery notification before it runs out. Passcode unlocking, a remote control with a 2K clear sight, see who's at your door, and control from anywhere through the Eufy app. With enhanced night vision, you can have optimized view even in the evening. You can also secure your package delivery by view and two-way audio. And then best of all, no monthly fee. A bunch of other brands out there are going to charge you a monthly fee. You have your recordings locally, and you never have to pay for storage. Customer service, Eufy's got you handled as well. They're on standby for you 24/7, so you can enjoy a worry-free experience with an 18-month warranty, all backed by their professional customer service team. Contact them anytime by telephone, email, or live chat. Personally, as a homeowner, I love my Eufy video lock. I have the ability to see what's going on when I'm not home, when packages has arrived, and really the thing I love the most about it, the ease of being able to lock and unlock my doors without having to fumble with my keys and reach in my pocket, or wait, no, crap, they're in my backpack, all that sort of stuff. All this is happening while my dogs are barking at me. You know what? Not anymore with the Eufy video lock. I touch it. 0.3 second fingerprint recognition, 1 second, door is unlocked. Much, much easier. So if you want to jump on board with Eufy Video Lock, search Eufy Video Lock. That is E-U-F-Y Video Lock. Again, that's Eufy Video Lock, E-U-F-Y Video Lock, or visit eufyofficial.com/videolock to see how you can gain complete control of your door.
Excellent athlete, and she can legit fight. She has really everything that you can think of when it.
And talks. She looked good in those segments setting up that match too.
Yeah, that everything about her screamed breakout star, and that would have been really, really cool to see her actually kind of grow and develop within the product and with this women's division. Look, we harp on the women's division not being great, and it's not necessarily their fault. There's just not enough depth if you can't keep running the same programs. And we kind of saw that at the beginning of this division where Nyla Rose was always at the top, and it just felt like, hey, let's get some new blood in here. And now they have new blood, and now it's really been shuffled down, and they're trying to diversify, but there's only so much you can do without a lot of depth. And they're slowly starting to build it up, but they need more of it in order to really take that division to the level that they'd like it to be. And I thought Paige VanZant could have been the catalyst of it. And it's unfortunate.
Yeah. I mean, again, if she decides to come back, that could work out really well. But right now it just doesn't seem like that's in the cards.
100%. Let's talk about a couple more things here, Fred, and then we'll get to some Dynamite and Rampage thoughts, including a couple questions as well. Brian Muster, he was AEW's lead video engineer, died unexpectedly on October 19th at the age of 36. He was with the company since it opened, and he had previously worked for TNA for 10 years from 2008 to 2018. Just an awful string of luck for both AEW and the wrestling business here the last couple weeks. We've seen people pass away way, way, way too young out of nowhere, and it's like all we can say is best wishes and condolences to everybody. It's just awful.
Yeah, terrible news, really. Thoughts with all his friends and family. I thought AEW did a very classy thing by airing a short tribute to him after Rampage's conclusion this past Friday. That was very nice. They had Excalibur say some very nice words about him. But just a tragic situation. There's a GoFundMe for him. We can link to that in the show's description this week. Just a very, very sad situation.
Very much so. Fred, what do you say we get into this Dynamite?
Sure.
Because it was very interesting. We had four titles on the line, and it ended up starting off with the trios match with Death Triangle, the champions, Pac, Pentagon Jr., and Rey Fénix versus the new AEW All-Atlantic champion Orange Cassidy and the best friends Chuck Taylor and Trent Barretta. This was fun.
This was an excellent match.
They just kicked the living crap out of each other. And then the end, Rey Fénix got the best friends with a double cutter. And then I believe he I know he hit Trent, but I think it was some kind of pile driver variation, and then he ended up getting the pin. Look, I gave this 4.25. I thought this was excellent, fast-paced. These teams gel well together, and they just beat the living crap out of each other.
Yeah, I really liked this match. It was very special, just a ton of fun, and I went 4.5 on it as far as star rating. Just a great way to open the show.
No, it was a great way to open the show. And as we kind of continued throughout Dynamite, they jumped right into Toni Storm versus Hikaru Shida for the AEW Interim Women's World Championship. And this ended up being pretty good, but I don't think it was quite near the level of the first match. And Storm ended up getting the win with the Storm Zero. And after the match, you had Hater attack Storm. And then Riho came down to save the day after Saraya charged Britt Baker on the ramp. And it feels like we're going to continue the story of Britt Baker and her squad versus the baby faces. And overall, I thought this was fine, but that's really about all I can say.
I like this one a lot. I like the match a lot, I'll say. I went 4 stars on it. I thought they were just very intense when they worked together, and I thought it was very fun. I did note that in the promo segment before this, Hayter and Baker were talking about how one of them was going to end up with the world championship, pointedly not saying the interim one. And it was done in such a way that Hayter was like, yeah, one of us will. And it was very much teasing something or other coming with the tease turn that they were going to do. Then they stopped teasing for a little bit, and now we're back to it. So,
yeah, just overall good match. I give it 3.5. Just really fun stuff. But
yeah,
I thought they could have gone to a different level, and maybe we'll get to see that down the line. Followed that up with Renee Paquette backstage with FTR, and they were talking about how they, even though they have all these belts, they want the AEW World Tag Team Championships. Swerve and Our Glory interrupted, and because of that, we are going to have a match next week for the number one contendership for the AEW World Tag Team Championships. I thought this segment was overall pretty good. They both had a claim to the number one contendership, and now they're going to decide who is the actual number one contenders.
Yeah, that match will be happening on Wednesday this week. I think it'll be a lot of fun. I'm looking forward to it. Hopefully mm-hmm. it'll be as good as I'm hoping it will be. But yeah, this was a basic segment that set it up well, and it keeps also pushing the eventual turn in Swerve and Our Glory. So we'll see where that goes.
The next little bit was Jay Lethal's backstage with Darby Allin, and they agreed to no physicality, but then they got rid of Alex Marvez, and they got physical anyways, and this was awesome.
Lethal, was a good segment.
Lethal lowered the garage door down on the abdomen of Darby Allin. They were beating him up, and then he puts in the figure four on the other side, and I thought this was tremendous stuff. I don't know where this Jay Lethal stuff is going, but I'm very intrigued.
I don't know if it's going to go anywhere other than just Darby winning a feud to keep him on the strong side. And Jay Lethal is in a position where I don't think they're going to push him where you should expect him to win a feud against Darby Allin. It could lead to an eventual face turn. I kind of hope not, because I do like the stable with Lethal, Satnam, and Sanjay. But I guess we'll see.
Yeah. And next up on the show was probably the best promo segment of all time, and I don't think I'm being hyperbolic in saying so. Tony Schiavone has William Regal in the ring. Before Regal can say anything, he's interrupted by MJF, where MJF goes on a diatribe and talks about how when he was 19 years old, he ends up meeting Regal at a WWE tryout, and Regal tells him, hey, you know, we can't sign you now because of your age, because he was only 19, but you keep sending me stuff every month, and you are going to get there. Regal was willing to put his name on MJF, and then after 3 months, Regal sent a pretty negative, harsh message, and MJF said he used that as motivation to get there. And just excellent stuff from MJF. But then Regal was like, fired back and said, hey, I sent that to light a fire under your ass, and it worked. And now challenging him to, hey, it's one thing to use these all the time, pointing to his brass knucks, but use them when it's necessary, not to just win like a coward. And overall, Fred, this was God-tier stuff. Regal felt like the ultimate heel when MJF was done talking, and he won the crowd over at the end. This is what we were hoping to get from William Regal. Real, passionate energy. And I don't think I can give this enough roses. Like, all the gold stars.
Yeah, this was an absolute all-time top-tier segment. I'm not even going to bother trying to add to the recap because it's just something you need to watch yourself. Like I said in my written review a couple weeks ago, every once in a while AEW does like a WWE-style talking segment that goes 10 or 15 minutes. This was one of them. But the thing with AEW is when they do it, it's stuff that matters. It's stuff that counts. They make sure that the pieces are there to make it an all-time segment. And that's what this was. Regal did the best work of his entire AEW career here. This is what you want to see from William Regal at this point in time. And there were some questions, I think, before if he would be able to get to this level because he kind of struggled at points, you know, previously in his AEW run. He eventually settled into being a guest commentator pretty well. But as far as in-ring promos, I don't think he had anything that even sniffed this level of excellence that he was able to accomplish with this. And MJF, I mean, it feels like every week that MJF comes out, cuts a promo, and it leaves people saying that's one of the best promos of all time. He has always been, in his entire AEW run, like a special talent, but it feels like he's just hit another level with his ability to present himself as a character in the ring, his ability to use a promo segment to get over himself and his storylines. He's just as hot as he can get right now, it feels like, as far as performer. It was very impressive that Regal was able to get the crowd back to where he was a babyface, because I thought he was doomed as soon as the MJF was done with basically his half of the segment. And this also helped set up, the eventuality, what happened eventually at the end of the show with setting up the MJF challenge of Jon Moxley, where basically Regal told him to not be a coward and to actually fight face up, you know, straight up. And MJF did that at the end of the show after teasing that he would be WWE style cashing in for several weeks.
And I think that needs to be really put into focus here, because it wasn't just that he challenged him to be a man and go the right way, in his words, not take another shortcut, but he turned his back on MJF, spread his arms out, and be like, okay, hit me.
Yeah.
Take a cheap shot. And MJF was like looking just furious, and he was clenching his fist, and he was about to, but he never did. And Regal looks at him, you still have a lot to prove, and walks out. And that's going to set up what you mentioned, where MJF does end up challenging for that AEW world title. We'll get to that here in a little bit. Overall, this MJF is already an all-timer, and he's 26 years old. I don't think we've spoken about somebody being an all-timer at 26 years old, maybe since Rey Mysterio Jr.
Maybe Okada. Because when he was 26, I think that might have been when he had his like super long reign. That would have been 2014. So he actually already may have had... No, he had not had the longest reign yet in IWGP history, but he was already a well-established top star.
Mm-hmm.
You have to go back to Okada. I mean, there hasn't... and in North America, I mean, I think you do have to go back to probably Mysterio. Maybe Bryan Danielson after him, but it is just apparent that MJF is special, and not just like... I think Willow Nightingale, for example, I'm not burying her, but you know, between the two, but
this
she's got a lot
pro Willow podcast.
Yeah. She's got super charisma. She feels basically like babyface Bayley from the NXT days before she got Vince McMahon for a while. But MJF is like a completely different level of prospect. You know, it kind of feels unfair calling him a prospect at this point in time. It's kind of like saying that Giannis Antetokounmpo is a prospect. You know, I mean, you know, Giannis is one of the best players ever already, like in that the top 50 conversation. The only question is how much higher will it get. MJF is one of the greatest promos of all time. It's already apparent, and the case is only going to get stronger and stronger as he advances.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, just all time stuff. And the next couple weeks as we lead into Full Gear are going to be even better. Next up on the show, we have Renee Paquette back, and they are obviously getting their money's worth with Renee. and she has done a tremendous job with these interview segments. Interviews with Eula and American Dragon Bryan Danielson. And Danielson said he was disappointed that he lost to Jericho, but he has a lot of high hopes for Garcia, and Yuta was pissed. Just looking at him straight, Bryan, have you not been paying attention? He's clearly using you to get what Jericho wants. Claudio gets it, but I guess it doesn't mean anything to you, clearly. And then he ends up walking out of the interview, and Danielson looks dejected. I'm very intrigued to see where this gets set up. I know that Jericho and I believe Hager next week on Dynamite, or tomorrow, as you guys are listening to this, have a match against Danielson and, or sorry, Yuta and Claudio Castagnoli.
It's actually Jericho and Garcia, I believe.
Oh, it's Jericho and Garcia. Okay. Well, two Jericho Appreciation Society members. So
yes,
this is evolving into a different realm, because it was, they had the Blood and Guts match, and this is continuing to grow and adapt. But this Garcia stuff is making things really interesting, and I'm wondering, I'm going to hypothesize here a little bit. Could this be the outs for Bryan Danielson for Blackpool Combat Club?
It could be the end of the group. It could just be Yuta leaving, or even Yuta and Claudio leaving, I guess, though that seems less likely. I love the storyline, although I will say that I thought it was a little hotter when Daniel Garcia was trying to do his own thing, at least to some extent. His coming back, you know, we'll talk about that later, but I think Yuta, this is really elevating him too. It's easy to forget that, because like 2 weeks ago it felt like Daniel Garcia was about the surest next big star in AEW in a while, since MGF's rise, really. But Yuta has been really helped by this too. He's doing better on the mic. He's not great yet, but he's improved noticeably since the start of the Blackpool Combat Club affiliation with him. And he just seems a lot more confident. But yeah, I thought this was a really good segment. I'm looking forward to where the storyline progresses to.
Absolutely. And next up, this was fun. And this might have been a lot of people's first exposure to Dalton Castle and the boys, The Ocho takes on Dalton Castle, 1/3 of the Ring of Honor World 6-man tag team champions. This was awesome. And it was Dalton Castle just throwing Jericho around. And then he ended up doing the spot. And if you've never seen it, it's a lot of fun. He's like, give me a boy. And then he just throws the boys at people. And like, it really makes me sad that Castle's body has failed him as much as it has, because his charisma and his ability to work a ring and a crowd is excellent. And
in a just world, he'd be making millions of dollars a year.
Oh, absolutely. And if you were to look back, like, drop this guy into 1984 Jim Crockett.
Oh, God.
he would have been fantastic. His gimmick would have gotten incredibly over. You're talking about him and guy working with guys like Ric Flair. Those matches would have been incredibly hot.
Oh, yeah.
This match ended up getting really hot, and Jericho ended up getting a nasty, nasty looking Judas Effect to finish the match. And just thought it was out of nowhere. Jericho said he was going to smash the ROH belt across Ian Riccaboni's head. But then Jerry Lynn walked out and stopped him. And then he spiked Jerry Lynn with a tombstone pile driver on the belt. Are we getting a Jerry Lynn match with Chris Jericho? Or is this just a one-off because he's Jerry Lynn? And I believe he was an ROH champion.
He was.
This is one of those ways where he's going to take out every ROH champion.
Honestly, if we get Jerry Lynn on TV, I don't know that would really maybe boost the viewership or anything, but I would love it. It'd be pretty amazing. But yeah, I thought this was just a great, great match. A very fun match. Great post-match. This was very much about not just the charisma of Jericho and Castle, but I mean, Castle took like 90% of the match. Jericho gave him a whole lot here. Mm-hmm. Made him, you know, let him look as good as possible. But yeah, the entrance for Dalton Castle, like, it's obvious that they wanted him to get over here. They really helped him. You know, they gave him the opportunity to get over, and And he just, I thought he just knocked it out of the park.
He really did. That was, it was just a tremendous match. And
I also love Jake Hager hat enthusiast. That was, that was fun. I mean, very goofy, but fun. I liked it. It was probably the most interested I've been in Jake Hager in his entire career.
Look, I love how they use Hager, and we all know why he's here. He's here because he saved Jericho's life.
He's solid at being muscle. There's absolutely nothing wrong with it. It's just like whenever there's like a singles match with him, I'm like, oh, you know.
He's not over pushed. The only time he got a world title match was in the heat of the pandemic.
Yeah.
And they were just trying to get eyeballs on TV. They were trying to have a regular-ish title matches. All right, let's heat Hager up real quick. And it ended up being pretty good. He's booked. He's like Danhausen. For what he is, he's
what a comparison.
He's just booked perfectly for what he is. He's just a meathead muscle guy. He has occasional matches, and he's not over pushed. He's 100% inoffensive for this company.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, I don't really have a problem with him, you know, his place on the roster or anything, but I do enjoy him enjoying bucket hats.
It's just fun. Yeah. And then finally the main event, John Moxley versus Hangman Page. This was fun. And John Moxley was bloody within 3 minutes because it's John Moxley. And Hangman Page didn't even let the bell hit. He jumped Moxley during Mox's entrance, and they fought through the crowd, and then they got into the ring. And you could tell this was just a fight. And unfortunately, they did exchange lariats, but the second lariat ended up being to Hangman Page, and that is when they ended up stopping the match. And he was diagnosed with that concussion. This was on pace to be like a 4¾ star match because they were kicking each other's asses.
Yeah, it was really setting up to be something special. And you know, the thing with wrestling is so often with these injuries, it's just fairly basic moves. And Paige got hurt off a clothesline and a flip bump. You know, it's not entirely clear which one did it. But the... I mean, at the beginning of this match, he did an Arihara moonsault off of a balcony, you know, like 10 feet above the ground or whatever it was. And, you know, that he came out of that unscathed, but it's the lariat that put him down or the bump ensuing from, you know, just it's what a business.
The way athletes get hurt makes absolutely no sense just because it's so incredibly random because of what they're actually doing.
Yeah.
And like they could have gotten hurt 20 minutes ago and all of a sudden the adrenaline kicks in. They take one step. Oh, there goes your ACL. Yeah. And it's just weird. But the most important thing was they handled this incredibly well. They did not show replays. Nope. They kept the camera off the ring.
Paul Turner did a fantastic job as the ref. I've actually suggested a couple times that Red Shizuno get considered for the Observer Hall of Fame because he's a very famous ref in Japan. With New Japan, but one criticism that I always hear about him is that he does not do well when things go off script. Mm-hmm. Paul Turner was the exact opposite there. He as soon as Page went down, Turner checked on him, noticed that he was unconscious and completely woozy, but unable to continue, and just stopped the match immediately. Got the doctor involved. That's exactly what a referee needs to do in that spot. There's no need to like let him try to continue the match. Because he would not have been in any condition to do that, especially with a possibility of a major neck injury involved. But yeah, they handled this very well.
Mm-hmm. And yeah, I think it was important to note that this happened with 9 minutes left in the show. So as the show continues to play out, they're obviously doing this whole thing off the cuff, and it was a little disjointed, and you can't expect perfect production. But I thought they did a really good job of continuing their storylines, and Moxley came out and said, I hope and pray that Hangman Page recovers 100%. This is a dangerous game that we play, and you've got to have the guts to play it. You've got to put everything on the line as you step into the ring. And then he calls out MJF. If MJF, you want to prove just who you say you are, you get yourself to the ring right now. MJF comes out with the poker chip, hands it to Regal, and then he ends up bowing out of the ring. And this is where we kind of see one step closer to babyface MJF. These people know I'm a man. I'm going to cash that chip in, but when I do, I want you at 110%. I want to make sure they beat you clean in the center of the ring. There's no doubt. I'm cashing my chip in at full gear. For the first time in my life, I'm going to earn it.
Yeah, this was awesome. It opens up a lot of storyline implications of him saying that and taking that path. He could win and be, you know, basically be a baby face. He could lose and it could continue the storyline of him like talking a lot of trash and not being able to deliver. It's very interesting to follow, I think. But I thought this was, considering the especially considering the circumstances, they handled it. They as performers, they did a great job.
I also just want to point out that I'm going to take my victory lap that he's going to do the RVD thing to John Cena at Extreme Rules. Or sorry, yep. One Night Stand. Wrong, stupid pay-per-view. yeah, victory lap completed.
That's right. You're right.
I was right, and that'll be the first time and maybe the last you'll ever hear that. Rampage. It's Friday, and you know what that means.
B-show.
B-show. Really, nothing... God. Nothing worth noteworthy.
I mean, as far you did get a segment teasing like Kingston and Pac having issues down the road, but like, man, you know, there was no great segments. I mean, Nyla Rose stealing Jade's car, and then Jade saying she's not leaving the ring until she gets the belt back, but then immediately getting up to leave the ring. That sure was a thing. There wasn't even a great match on here. Like, I thought the main event of Orange Cassidy 10 and Roosh was like pretty good, but like, you know, in this day and age, a 3.25 star match ain't going to get you that far. Willow Nightingale got announced as All Elite, and then it was immediately rushed out of the ring by Jade Cargill. It kind of, they probably could have done that in a way that would make Jade look like a more meaningful baby face rather than just kind of cowering as she and the two baddies come out. But yeah, this was, of all the shows that have existed, this was one of them.
Yeah.
I'm not even inspired to really say anything about it, you know, beyond what I already have.
Like, who cares? Like, they need to give us a reason to watch Rampage, and right now, they haven't given us one.
No.
And it kind of leads into our one question from the Voices of Wrestling Discord, and that comes from NC Kyle. If AEW gets on HBO Max, what's the first thing you're going to rewatch? And then will you guys cover a weekly ROH show if they get television? Fred, I love your response. I think I'd rather watch the RA show than Rampage, to be honest. I might Alvarez my way through the ladder. Yeah, that's kind of what we're doing here. Let's start with that first question, Fred. The HBO Max, if they end up getting that streaming service, I said last week, I think the first thing I'm going to go back and rewatch is going to be Pac versus Kenny Omega, the 30-minute Ironman match. That and the first Dynamite, because that first Dynamite and then just comparing it to where the production is today, I think would be a really fun watch. What would be the first things that you kind of want to go look back at?
I think I'd like to sit down and watch the Lucha Brothers and Young Bucks from All Out in 2019. I was in the building for that match, which was incredible, but I'd love to be able to see it with the full presentation on TV. I haven't been to that many shows live, unfortunately, just due to, you know, work and stuff, but that was an amazing, absolutely all time top tier match. But I would love to just see how that came across on TV.
I'll tell you, having watched it live myself, it came through great. That was fun and stupid and ridiculous, all in the best ways. It's really hard to actually paint the picture of how stupid a Young Bucks and Lucha Brothers match was, but considering you were in the building for it, I think it's going to look, it may even look better on TV, just because you're going to get better angles and better camera shots and yada, 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 but you're not going to be able to get that atmosphere back.
Right.
And then will we cover ROH show? I think that's yet to be determined, but I think it's likely, Fred, that we will, just because it ends up being kind of a part of this universe, and there's going to be so much cross promotion between the two.
Yeah, I would definitely watch that for sure every week. And I would definitely prioritize it over Rampage because I think there'd be storylines on the ROH show that would be more interesting using higher level stars. But yeah, I mean, if that does happen, you know, I'll definitely have to check it out.
Yeah. And then YouTube shows, Renee Paquette was on Hey EW. I did not get a chance to watch that. Did you get a chance to check it out? Because I know she is a fun talker.
It was a very enjoyable. She and RJ City riffed on the fact that she was coming in, and RJ City was playing up that he was afraid she was going to take his spot, mainly at the beginning and the end of the show. But it was fun. It was a straighter interview than some other ones he's done, but still with the RJ City goofiness. So again, if that's your thing, check it out.
Yeah, and then next week on Dynamite, we've got Swerve and Our Glory versus FTR for that number one contendership for the AEW Tag Team Championship. Jamie Hayter versus Riho, which will be a very interesting contrast of styles. Chris Jericho and Daniel Garcia versus Claudio Castagnoli and Wheeler Yuta. And then Bryan Danielson versus Sammy Guevara. And it's going to be a very Blackpool Combat Club versus Jericho Appreciation Society show. And not a whole lot to write home about, but I think this could end up being a really good Dynamite just because of the four matches we currently have announced.
Yeah, it looks really good on paper, and hopefully it'll all deliver. But I think that I do think that FTR match could be really special. I kind of got to the point where I was getting down on FTR despite their great pair of matches with the Briscoes, because, you know, they haven't been doing too much recently. And then I watched their Royal Quest match against Aussie Open, and that was amazing.
Oh, I still need to go and watch that.
Oh, that's like a top 10 match on the year for me. So
that excites me.
Really good.
That excites me a lot, Fred. And with that, and unless we ended up forgetting anything, I think that is our show here for the day, which this company is staying hot considering all the drama. We hopefully have the Elite coming back soon, which is only going to make things better. But it's been pretty awesome that even though the Elite and CM Punk have been gone, this company has still been as quality as it is.
Yeah, they've really kept everything rolling cleanly. The shows have not been affected by anything. And I think this next Dynamite will be another very good one.
Absolutely. And you can find us on Twitter at GoodBadHungee. And that is spelled H-U-N-G-E-E. You can hit us up by email at hungeepod@gmail.com. And you can always make sure you ask us questions, either of those two platforms or on the Voices of Wrestling Discord. Look, this has been really fun, and we look forward to continuing to talk about this fun, entertaining company. And the Vikings are still 5-1, Fred. They did not lose on the bye week this week, and I'm feeling pretty good about that.
Yeah, I don't know. You know, it feels very paper tigerish to me, or paper lion, I guess, to me. But I guess we'll see going forward.
Oh, it feels that way. Just go read all my stuff on the Vikings Wire. I have no idea what this team is, and I don't think they do either.
There is one thing I want to plug before we go, which is not mine or ours, but the Wrestling 101 is a new series that's being done on Voices of Wrestling by. It's Kevin Hare and Robin Reed. Thank you. I was trying to stall. But what they're doing is they put together a list of the 101 matches you should see as a wrestling fan, just so you can be able to point to all these different, you have the knowledge about all these different aspects of wrestling. It's not a list of the 101 greatest matches ever. It's not intended to be that, but it's just 101 very different matches covering a wide range from the first match they listed was Kensuke Sasaki against Kenta Kobashi back in 2005 for Noah, which is an all-time top-level match. And then you go on to stuff like the Mick Foley Undertaker Hell in a Cell match, Stan Hansen against Andre the Giant in New Japan World back in the, I think that's the late 70s. Mm-hmm. The Time Bomb death match between Onita and Terry Funk. The Golden Lovers against Danshoku Dino and Yoshihiko, you know, the infamous wrestling blow-up doll. And then finally, Fire Road, which was Kasai and Matsunaga against Nick Gage and John Zadig back in 2000. Mm-hmm. Just, you know, it's just very, very different stuff, but it's a very interesting way to look at wrestling, and it's a great excuse to read and watch matches that you haven't seen before. So I'm using that to fill in some gaps in my knowledge.
Yeah, and I think it's really interesting that you point out that this isn't a list of the 101 greatest matches. It's ones that you need to see. And what was really cool about it is in our office Slack, there's a dedicated channel to it, and they ask for wide ranges of opinions on what should be included, why should it be included. And there were a lot of really, really good and important matches that still didn't make it. They took the time and they put a lot of energy into making sure that they had matches covering every area,
oh, yeah,
every time frame, style. And this, those first six matches that you mentioned were spectacles. And like, I think one of the ones that you could have included that wasn't was Antonio Inoki versus Muhammad Ali. It's, there are just special types of matches that, even though they don't necessarily qualify as great per se, they're necessary to really understand the business of professional wrestling and how a build and the illusion of complexity, or the illusion of actual danger, like in that time bomb death match, or the lack thereof in that that fire death match with Kasai and Gage. Like, it's just important to understand all different ways of promotion and utilizing wrestling and their talents. And I think Kevin and Robin have done a tremendous job. And I think everybody's really going to enjoy this series. And even though there's going to be some disagreements, like, you're not going to have like every single Okada title match. You're not going to have all three versus Kenny Omega. You're like, there are some wrestlers that don't even appear on here, even though their stuff is just tremendous. There are some that'll appear on here four or five times. Like, it, everything depends on what it is and why it's viewed as more important than something else. And they did a tremendous job of narrowing it down, and they didn't use egos. They just used crowdsourcing with people who care, who have watched this stuff. And then they used their own excellent intellect to build this. And I think everybody's going to really enjoy the finished product.
Yeah, they really, I mean, they put a lot of work into it. I mean, not only is there like a link to each of these chosen matches, but there's also some suggested matches to go along with it if you like the, you know, what one of the matches they chose, and several paragraphs describing like what the match was and why they chose it for this. So, great stuff.
It's very really good stuff. Make sure you keep an eye on that on voicesofwrestling.com and on the Twitter account at voicesofwrestling. For all of that and our shows to be posted, Wrestling 101 also has its own website, wrestling101.com.
So you the Wrestling 101.
The Wrestling101.com. You can check out everything that they posted so far, and I'm sure that everything that they have will continue to backlink other pieces of it. But until then, from Fred and myself, thank you very much for listening, and Skull Vikings.
Have a good one.